This is our last show of this year, and today is December 31, 2023. That's 12/31/23, or 1-2-3, 1-2-3, and things are happening 1-2-3 in a row here. We're going to get into the top 10 things that happened this year that were not especially good. Jim's got a list that won't quit, and let me introduce our panel here. Of course, we have Jim Fetcher, the greatest miner in America, with his books about Sandy Hook and others that you got to get. These books are classics and probably the most important historical books you'll find. And then we also have Scott Bennett, who is just a real wonder. And he's written a book here on about shell game, about the financing of terrorists. Oh, wow. But he's just on a run right now. He's just doing great with around the world. And we have hats off to David Brian Davidson, a private investigator out of Houston, Texas. And boy, we have got one heck of a show today. And I think the stories are really heavy. The top 10 stories of the 2023. Boy, I don't think 23 was a good year. You, Jim?
Well, Don, there are 10 stories, but they're all roughly equally weighted. So it's not
Yeah.
actually as though they increase in significance, though some
Right.
may feel as though they do. Let's begin with our top 10 stories of 2023. Number one, Ukraine. NATO loses, Russia wins. Putin admits he'd been naive about the West. He thought they wanted to welcome Russia into the community of nations when what they really wanted was Russia's dismemberment. The West was determined to break Russia apart after the collapse of the Soviet Union, believing multiple states based on the country's ruins would be too weak to resist outside influence. Putin admitted he was naive early in his political career, even though he had a solid background in Soviet intelligence. The president said he believed the West understood Russia had become a completely different country after the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991, and that there were no further ideological differences warranting a serious standoff. But even when he saw Western efforts to support terrorism and separatism in Russia decades ago, he thought it was the inertia of thinking, mental habits that were to blame. They just got used to fighting the Soviet Union. In reality, however, he now recognizes the West was deliberately trying to undercut Russia. After the collapse, they thought they just had to wait a little longer, and then they could break Russia apart as well. The West saw no need for the existence of the world's largest country with its vast resources. It would be better, as suggested by former NSA advisor Zbigniew Brzezinski, to divide Russia into five parts and subjugate them one by one. This plan hinged on the premise that smaller states would have no weight or voice of their own, would have no chance to defend their national interests in the way the United Russian Federation has been able to do so. Colonel McGuire observes, 500,000 Ukrainian soldiers have died, 10 times worse than World War I. This war is done. Not surprisingly, therefore, Ukraine would like to raise 500,000 more soldiers, but they are not there. They're recruiting children, the elderly. I can't wait for them to put pregnant women at the front lines. Meanwhile, Hal Turner reports that Russia has come to the United States to lay out terms of surrender. These include complete Ukrainian surrender, complete of all military equipment, Russian territorial range from Kharkov to Odessa, give Russia complete control of the Black Sea. Western Ukraine cannot join NATO or have any military aid. Russia doesn't care who controls Western Ukraine, and has openly offered it to Poland. Whether these would be acceptable is a whole nother matter. Here we have where some have floated the idea they might give parts to Romania or Hungary or Poland. Let's listen to Colonel McGregor reflect on the latest.
The United States still a superpower? Is it the greatest military in the world? Over the past few hours, the House of Representatives has passed a $886 billion defense bill. That doesn't account for the hundreds of billions of dollars they don't tell you about. This will go to President Biden's desk to be signed. Presumably, it should make Americans feel safer, right? It should propel us to superhero status in the United States. But it looks like it's done the opposite of that, as our U.S. southern border is like a sieve. Tens of thousands of people pouring across the border every day. Bridges crumbling. Tent cities across the United States. The de-dollarization of the United States dollar is happening in real time. Just listen to Vladimir Putin at a major press conference over the past few days talking about the de-dollarization. Was 87% of all transactions in Russia now down to 20%. So is the United States still a superpower? Let's ask Colonel Douglas McGregor. He's the CEO of OurCountryOurChoice.com, retired combat veteran and sec defense advisor under President Trump. Colonel, great to see you. Happy holidays to you and Merry Christmas.
Same to you, Clayton.
So I'll ask you, I'll start there. I mean, it's a very broad sort of 35,000 foot question, but when you see this National Defense Authorization Act, $886 billion, and Americans are struggling to put food on their table right now, should Americans feel safer that their government has just spent that amount of money to shovel to the Pentagon?
Clayton, this is probably a good time for a retrospective. We're headed into the end of the year. And if we look back on the last 2.5 years of the Biden administration, we can actually go further than that. But certainly if we just focus on the time since Biden took office, there's a legitimate question about the current strength and power of the United States, both internally as a society and externally as an actor on the world stage. And there's a real question about our future. Where are we really headed? And I think the answer is nowhere good. We are actually in a rapid decline as a great power. The problem is we have a government similar to the scene in The Wizard of Oz with the little man behind the curtain who is manipulating lights and images in front of everyone. And suddenly the little dog runs over, pulls the curtain back, and the people discover, my God, there's nothing behind any of this. I think we're getting close to it. We're not there yet because still the majority of Americans are not really paying attention to what happens overseas. In fact, too many of them are not paying attention to what's going on inside the country. A lot of them are beginning finally to notice the rising criminality, the human trafficking, the drug crisis because of the open borders. But still, there are too many Americans who are sitting comfortably watching football and trying to find out about Taylor Swift's love life. And when someone brings bad things up, too many of them are saying, well, you know, it's not really my problem. It is their problem. They live inside this country. They can't ignore the plight of people on the Texas border, the people in Southern Arizona, and the people in Southern California, but we do. And at the same time, we have to go back and look at this terrible war that's occurred in Ukraine. What has happened in Ukraine? Everything that we have predicted, and I'm talking about the government and its minions and its supporters in the mainstream media, has failed. All of the advice that we have given to the Ukrainians, all of the equipment that we have given to them, none of it has worked. It's all failed miserably. I think of at least 1 billion plus people around the world who pay attention. America is weak. America looks vapid. And then we have this president who has trouble grinding out 2 or 3 coherent sentences. And we just listened to President Putin of the Russian state speak for over 4 hours. He delivers a speech and then he speaks extemporaneously for hours, answering questions for hours without notes because he has command of the information, command of the material. That's one of the big reasons that Putin has such support inside of Russia. He's a highly intelligent man and he is absolutely committed to what is in the best interest of Russia. And he's done everything in his power to avoid a war with the United States and NATO, while we have done everything we possibly could to provoke him and continue to do so. In the meantime, you've got over 500,000 Ukrainian dead lying on the battlefields. I don't know how many civilians have died. how many millions have left the country? It's probably well over the 14 million that we saw a few months ago. The Ukrainian nation is effectively dead. It's comatose. I don't think it's even on life support. The people who are on life support in Kyiv, those are the crooks and the criminals running the country. They're about to receive another infusion of American cash that they no doubt will transfer to their bank accounts on Cyprus and Switzerland and elsewhere. How much of that will make any difference to the poor human beings dying on the battlefield is impossible to speculate. I mean, when you reach the point where in order to be evacuated as a Ukrainian soldier or officer from the battlefield where you were severely wounded, that you have to bribe the ambulance crew to take you to a location where you can receive real medical attention, it's over. There's no military infrastructure to take care of anyone. People are simply being herded into gunfire. This war is over. The Russians are moving deliberately and slowly towards the West. And the great lie that Putin wants to conquer Eastern Europe is falling apart. And that's beginning to happen in Germany and Austria and France and elsewhere. Finally, after months of lies after lies after lies, the populations are beginning to say, what? What's really happening? I'm looking around and my economy is destroyed. Our jobs are vanishing. And we are overwhelmed by foreigners, unwanted migrants, people that are in our country. We never asked for them. The government never consulted with us. The government simply said, if you don't accept millions of foreigners into your midst, well, then you're a Nazi. Then right. You're a bigot. And people are saying, no, wait a minute. This has nothing to do with being a Nazi. This is about the survival of the French nation, of the German nation, and so forth and so on. All of these things are coming together. Meanwhile, inside the United States, Americans, many of them, quietly are saying, wait a minute, more money for Ukraine? This war is over, isn't it? It's essentially gone. Just look at the map. Look at the advance of the Russian forces. The Russian forces are now in pristine condition. They're the strongest and most powerful military establishment on the planet. What are we? We can't even man the armed forces. We can't recruit.
Scott, I want you to pick it up from there. I think he does a wonderful job of an overview, but give us the latest developments in relation to Russia and Ukraine.
Yeah, let me play this video and you give me participant screen sharing and then I will. I like McGregor. He's one of the few men I really admire and respect and listen to. Present company, you know, excluded, of course. But McGregor is a brilliant man. He is an historian. He's educated. He's eloquent, and he's honest. And that's the highest degree of respect I would give to any man is honesty. And he's fearless. And that's what we need in political office and military office. And I think he'd be the perfect a president. He's a George Washington type. I don't think he's going to go in that direction. But he's head and shoulders above anything else we have. You know, Michael Flynn. He's a bit lighter compared to the searchlight in the sky that McGregor is. He's you know, telling the truth. This was an interview that I just did on RT, and I'm going to spare my words so I can economize, but I want to play this because it gives both an assessment of the Ukraine situation, the Ukraine lashing out, and what Russia needs to do next. So let me just play it.
The U.S. State Department told Russian media they don't support Kyiv's actions. Russia's foreign ministry said that London and Washington are culpable for the attack and that the incident will be brought up at the U.N. Security Council.
The terrorist attack in Belgorod will be the subject of proceedings in the UN Security Council. The United Kingdom is behind the terrorist attack in Belgorod, which in coordination with the United States incites the Kyiv regime to terrorist actions, understanding that the counter-offensive by the armed forces of Ukraine has failed. London, as the Ukrainian government's representatives recently stated, has banned Kyiv from negotiating with the Russian side. They bet on the so-called victory of...
But I think maybe with the background noise, you just give us a summary, and I think that'll work better. Go right ahead and tell us what you were reporting on RT.
Let me see.
First of all, I just want to get your thoughts.
Here, let me play it this way. No, I wanted to play the video. The background noise is part of the video. It's gone.
Background noise was part of the video?
Yeah, it was some Mexican doing the blowing of the leaves, but it's over with now. So just.
All right.
Don, you can edit all that out. All right, here we go.
Also, what you make of the timing of this Ukrainian strike? Could it be linked to that Russian strike yesterday on Ukraine, or as the Russian MOD says, a result of Kiev's failures on the battlefield?
Well, it's both. It's definitely an attempt to distract away from Russia's massive barrage yesterday. This is what the Kiev regime does at the orders of the United States and Britain and Germany and NATO commanders, of course. So it's a distraction operation. They've tried to say another Russian missile went into Poland. They pulled that old story out again, the same one that they tried to do 8 months ago or so. It's very clear that the entire Ukrainian regime under Zelensky is crippling and falling apart. We've seen people like Oleg Soskin, a former advisor, saying Zelensky should resign, as well as the defense minister Umarov should resign. So it's clear there's a musical chairs disintegration of the Zelensky regime that's occurring. This act of terrorism and desperation and murder is a grotesque sign of really the savagery that Russia has been facing. And I think Ambassador Nebesnya's statement in the United Nations should be the hardest hitting statement he's ever given. They should clearly be saying, people of Germany, this is what your government's doing. People of Britain, people of Scotland, people of Ireland, people of the United States, this is what your government is doing to innocent children ice skating, to innocent children laughing and opening presents under Christmas trees, to mothers giving apple cider to their little children in the winter of Christmas time. This is what your governments are backing with the weapons and the cluster bombs that they are giving to a psychopath, Zelensky, murdering children. This is what the people of America and Britain and Germany and France, the European nations, are backing. So I think Nebesnya needs to divide the governments of the globalist, George Soros, World Economic Forum, UN, NATO, psychotics, separate them from the people of the West. And you'll see, of course, in the next year, an entire abandonment of Ukraine. This is another reason. I think they're setting him up to be replaced by Tymoshenko, the female. And I think they're going to try and replace him or assassinate him and then try and sue for peace. So they're trying to slow down the Russian advance by these sort of terrorist attacks. And then they're also stabbing Zelensky in the back like Julius Caesar. And next they'll replace him and try and immediately throw someone in front of the Russian military to plead for peace. But Russia should not accept any of these overtures. They're all lies. They're designed to create a 38th parallel stalemate. Russia should push forth. And in the next 10 days, Russia should launch, I would say, the most devastating military attack it's ever done, so that Christmas is welcomed with silence of Ukrainian guns, because Russia has effectively destroyed them all.
God, I think that was simply excellent. Roger, your thoughts about Ukraine-Russia.
Upcoming UN Security Council meeting.
Well, I think it's the money lenders that are pulling all the strings. This is nothing more than a big clearance operation. Now, for Putin to come out and make this comment that he was shocked and surprised by the duplicity of the West shows that his intelligence isn't as good as ours. I mean, we know better than that. This is ridiculous. I mean, this plan to clean out and enslave has been in place since the 1800s, and even farther back, I believe, to that, all the way back. It goes back as far as money's been traded and banks have been setting themselves up. Putin ought to know by now who you can trust and who you can't trust. It's a question of Who's he taking his money from? That's the same thing with the Western leaders as well. I really think that things, the more I look at things, the more it's boiling down to a bunch of central banking cartels that are controlling everything all the time, telling us who our politicians are going to be, telling us what our politicians are going to do, telling nations how they're going to run their situations. And I think that they're a bunch of damn Masons. I mean, I've seen pictures of Putin dressed up in his garbs and all of his things. He's part of the club. He's the special club. Oh, I didn't know the West was gonna double cross me. Yeah, give me a break. Either the man's not a patriot or he's a sellout. He knew.
Fascinating, fascinating.
Let me just add, Jim, Russia yeah. has struck back yeah. As a result of that attack on Belgorod. Russia has struck back, and I'll just summarize. An attack was carried out on a branch of the National Space Control Center in Western Ukraine, which was used by Kiev for reconnaissance, fuel depots in Kharkov. Kiev-controlled parts of Russia's Zaporozhye region were also destroyed. So Russia sent precision missile strikes and eliminated, quote, representatives of the SBU leadership, foreign mercenaries, and fighters of the Ukraine Kraken unit, who were directly preparing sabotage on Russian territory. So Russia has struck back and eliminated a bunch of command and control centers and leaders and things like that. And I said in that video, they need to amplify their psychological war, their diplomatic war. They need to be doing everything the opposite of what Zelensky's doing. They need to separate Zelensky and the government from the Ukrainian people. They need to be creating dual passports, dual ID cards, Ukraine, Russia, you know, something like that, where the people perceive that their future is inevitable reunification with Russia. That doesn't mean they lose their identity, but their reunification is inevitable. And by engaging in diplomatic war and psychological war, you will quicken the disintegration of the Zelensky government. So they've yet to really amplify that. But Zbigniew also went on the United Nations yesterday and gave a speech, and I talked about that. He needs to be very, very hard-hitting and direct.
Very good. Meanwhile,
United States.
Top 10 stories of 2023, number two, the Houthis create chaos. The Houthis have Biden by the short hair, writes Mike Whitney. Yemen said stop the blockade of Israeli-bound ships as soon as sufficient food, water, and medicine were allowed to enter Gaza. Guess that's asking too much, says Elizabeth Murray. Yemen's Houthi has shown how a small army can take on the American empire and win. They have shown how courage, resolve, and commitment can act as a force multiplier, allowing a far weaker military to punch above its weight. They've shown how a few well-placed missiles in key locations on the world's most critical shipping lanes can send tremors across a global economy and shake the rules-based order to its foundation. In short, the Houthis have shown that David can bring down Goliath without breaking a sweat, provided David maintains his perch along the Bab al-Mandab Strait. Here's what's going on. The Houthis occupy an area along the narrowest part of the Red Sea, the most important shipping corridor in the world, which is responsible for 12% of international trade, almost one-third of global container traffic. When the movement of ships is disrupted along the waterway, insurance premiums skyrocket, prices on retail rise, oil prices go through the roof. That's why Western powers are committed to keeping these shipping lanes open at all times, whatever the cost. Here's how CNN puts it. Yemen's Iran-backed Houthi rebels are stepping up strikes on ships in the Red Sea, which they say are revenge against Israel for its military campaign in Gaza. The attacks have forced some of the world's biggest shipping and oil companies to suspend transit through one of the world's most important maritime trade routes, which could potentially cause a shock to the global economy. At present, the shipping lanes are effectively closed due to Houthi attacks on Israeli-bound vessels. This has slowed overall traffic to a crawl. If the current situation persists or worsens, the impact on the global economy could be catastrophic. Vanessa Beely writes, Not a single cargo has arrived in Israel for 2 weeks, and we expect the same for the next four. Surprisingly, the Houthis don't stand to gain anything from their efforts. They're actually putting themselves at great risk of retaliation by the U.S. to pressure Israel into stopping its relentless bombardment of Gaza and allow the starving Palestinian people access to food, water, and medical supplies. The Houthis should probably be applauded for their selfless compassion and humanity, as do all of us. But Washington doesn't see it that way. They don't think the Houthis' actions are laudable, virtuous, or just. They see them as a challenge to American primacy, as a threat to their regional hegemony and global leadership, as interference in their Gaza policy, in which Israel has been granted carte blanche to kill and maim as many Palestinians as it sees fit to achieve its own strategic objective, which is the greater Israel. So what we have is an unstoppable force versus an immovable object. We have two opposing points of view, no way to resolve them without a direct military confrontation. That means there's going to be trouble in the very near future, where the Houthis have prepared naval mines for American and Israeli ships. Last Monday, Secretary of Defense Austin announced he'd assembled a 10-member coalition to patrol the waterways in the Red Sea and defend freedom of navigation. Now, a reasonable person might wonder why he would cobble together another makeshift military coalition instead of first contacting the Houthi leadership to see if a deal could be worked out and a confrontation avoided through diplomacy. But those who followed U.S. foreign policy for the past 3 years know the U.S. does not negotiate with people or countries it considers to be its inferiors. So this option was quickly discarded. Instead, the U.S. has decided to pursue a traditional approach to emerging crises involving a fair amount of incendiary rhetoric, followed by a military hammer blow. And that appears to be the direction things are now headed. There's not a lot of wiggle room here. The Houthis want a cessation of the violence and the distribution of humanitarian aid, and they're willing to go to war with the United States to make their demands met. And no one knows better than the Houthis what that means. During the 9 years they were at war with Saudi Arabia, Washington provided the weapons and embargo power that led to the death of an estimated 377,000, more than half died due to starvation and disease caused by the siege. So the Houthis know of what savagery Washington is capable. Even so, they are not backing down, not caving in. There's going to be a ceasefire. There's going to be war. It's up to Biden to decide. But if he opts for war, he should realize it's not going to be a cakewalk. Oh, no. There are going to be attacks on American bases, American warships, Saudi oil fields and infrastructure. Oil prices will soar. Commercial shipping will grind to a standstill. Global equities will tumble. Meanwhile, Russia and China will be watching from the sidelines while Uncle Sam drains the last ounce of credibility and power down a black hole on the Arabian Peninsula. This is how Houthi leader Syed Abdul al-Mark al-Houthi summed it up. If the U.S. wants to go to war with us, they must know that we are waiting. We want a direct war between Yemen and the U.S. and Israel. We are not afraid of America, and all the people of Yemen will stand against them. This is a war the U.S. could easily avoid by doing the right thing and approving a ceasefire now. But that would bring a swift end to Israel's atrocities and stop the attacks on commercial shipping at the same time. That's a solution we can all live with. And while they initially brought together the U.S., the U.K., Bahrain, Canada, France, Italy, the Netherlands, Norway, the Seychelles, and Spain, it appears the whole project has been abandoned, perhaps because Chinese, Iranian, and Indian warships are now in the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden. Scott, your thoughts, my friend.
Well, Russia and Iran have just signed an economic deal to trade in rubles and the riyal, the Iranian currency, so that's significant. And the Eurasian Economic Union has signed a deal to do trade with Iran. So all of these sanctions has backfired. And to build upon what McGregor was talking about earlier, all of these the wars in the last 10 years specifically have been the ruination of America. We've just spent ourselves. We've not created new weapons technology. We've just used what we've regurgitated from the military industrial complex and gone around the world and overturned beehives. And now the bees are all swarming together in a unified mind to not only restrain the United States from tipping over anymore, like we're just trying to do in Serbia, by the way. We're trying to create another color revolution. That's going to backfire. The entire world is distancing itself from the United States economically, and in the Red Sea, the Houthi shipping attacks, that is going to culminate into a broader war. The United Kingdom is already going to strike the Houthis. They're advertising. So I could see the United States, the United Kingdom, engaging in far more serious attacks. The Navy is already destroying Houthi ships that are firing upon them, allegedly. It's only a matter of time before a missile is fired and sinks one of these U.S. ships. And then it goes to the next level, and then you're only going to have the United States lose, cataclysmically. I predict you are going to see the United States lose all of its naval vessels in the Red Sea, in the Mediterranean, in the Persian Gulf, because we're ships and they're land missiles. We don't have any hope for resupplying them, and I think the bases in Iraq are already in the process of being removed. I could see U.S. Central Command, if they pick a fight with Iran, Russia is going to give Iran all of the weapon technology that it needs to defend itself. So you see Russia, Iran, China, and I think India too is going to enter this. The Indians are about as loyal as a pile of shit on the sidewalk. They have no loyalty by temperament, by religion, or anything else. So if the United States thinks that India is going to side with them, they've got another thought coming. So you're already seeing BRICS, the Eurasian Economic Union, and all these other countries siding against the United States. And Israel is even less loyal than the Indians, of course. And I think you're going to witness all of these Muslim nations sending slow parades of guerrilla fighters into the war region to attack Israel. So Israel, as others have said too, is dead, and it's only a matter of time before you see a massive airlift of people leaving Israel. And I don't know where they think they're going to go. Ukraine is not going to welcome them because Russia is going to capture Ukraine, and they're not going to buy any property there anymore, as they've been doing. So the whole world is about to go upside down, and the United States is not in a good position, Jim.
Brian, your thoughts?
Well, I'll tell you where they're going to go. They're going to go to Mexico and then cross the border into America and have nice, comfortable lives. They'll be able to pick up their $5,000 food cart at the border, and then they'll be able to go and find themselves a nice little apartment someplace and get a good job in a little community that supports them. And they won't have to pay any taxes, of course. They won't have to worry about anything. They'll get free medical care. Why wouldn't they leave? As a matter of fact, we've got this problem in Yemen now. These Houthi guys, what are they thinking? Third rate power going up against the great sea maritime power of the United States of America. What are they thinking protecting their little ports and their interests like that? We can't have this. The problem is America's out here waving around our flag all over the place, and the rest of the world and even our partners are saying, you know what? I'm not so sure that these guys are on the moral high ground anymore. This is getting a little bit dicey here. So you got this tiny little country totally disrespecting us in that area, and there's nothing that we can do about it. You know what? I have a suggestion. I think America ought to go ahead and go get all these Houthi rebels and just offer them American citizenship and fly their asses over here and give them a check card for $5,000. That's the best way to solve the problem.
I think Americans ought to leave the country and migrate so they can get
That's
all
right.
the benefits
we,
being given.
We should,
to
go,
the
we should send all of our young academics over to fight with the Houthi rebels and then bring all those Houthi
Very
rebels
nice.
Over here to start a new life in America.
Donald,
Brilliant, Brian.
Let me just add
Love
one thing
it.
To that, too. When Brian said bringing the Houthis over, I like that idea, of course. But here's one thing. The states like Abbott flying these illegal immigrants to Vermont or elsewhere, you know, I can understand the humor of doing that and stuff. But if they really wanted to be effective, they should take every one of these migrants and fly them to Washington, D.C. and just dump them on the Capitol. Because it is the Capitol that is doing this. It is the federal government that is allegedly preventing Texas and other states from rounding them up. Now, Texas ought to round them up and ship them back. But in the meantime, if they were going to be effective, they should drop them all off in Washington, D.C. and let them saturate Washington, D.C. and the halls of Congress and such.
Give oh, my God. Right that is so funny that you say that. That is so funny. Because Trump comes out this week and says, sure, I think we should go ahead and let the FBI have their new building in Washington, D.C., the armpit of the world. Of course, they don't want to head someplace else, go someplace out. But I'm telling you, that place is a pit of despair. Nobody wants to be there. Nobody wants to be there.
Very nice. Very nice. Meanwhile, top 10 stories at 2023, number three, Israel losing to Hamas. The Washington Post has published maps of Israel's destruction of Gaza. It's horrific. The Israeli military campaign has been unlike any other in the 21st century. Israeli airstrikes and ground invasion began 20 days after the October 7th, have destroyed large swaths of the besieged territory, killed at least 20,057, and displaced the vast majority of the population. The Washington Post analyzed satellite imagery, airstrike data, UN damage assessments, interviewed more than 28 workers, healthcare providers, experts in munitions and aerial warfare. The evidence shows Israel has carried out its war in Gaza at a pace and level of devastation that exceeds any recent conflict, destroying more buildings in less time than were destroyed during the Syrian regime battle for Aleppo over 3 years. 2013 to 2016, or the U.S.-led campaign to defeat Islamic State in Mosul, Iraq, and Raqqa, Syria in 2017. The Post found the Israelis have conducted repeated and widespread airstrikes in proximity to hospitals, which are supposed to receive special protection under the laws of war. Satellite imagery revealed dozens of apparent craters near 17 of 28 hospitals in northern Gaza, including 10 craters, suggesting the use of bombs weighing 2,000 pounds, the largest in regular use. Meanwhile, Paul Rogers reports Israel is losing the war against Hamas, but Netanyahu and his government will never admit it. Until recently, the narrative has been largely controlled by the IDF. The narrative was helped by severe difficulties for the few journalists still in Gaza, including at risk of their personal safety, about 80 of whom, by the way, have been, in my opinion, assassinated. Now a different picture has begun to emerge. A lack of evidence to support the IDF claim of Hamas headquarters under the Al-Shabta hospital, when the IDF couldn't identify the location of the Israeli hostages, despite allegedly having some of the world's most advanced intelligence. Now there have been two further incidents. On 12 December, a skillful triple ambush staged by Hamas in an area supposedly controlled by Israeli forces. An IDF unit was ambushed, took casualties. Further troopers sent aid, and they were ambushed. And then they sent reinforcements who were ambushed, too. All this means IDF commanders are coming under huge pressure to succeed. They'll go as far as the war cabinet will allow. Many of them are highly intelligent, but single-minded. They'll now know that for all of Netanyahu's rhetoric, Hamas, or at least Hamas ideas, cannot be defeated by military force. They also know that while talks are stalling, pressures from the families may soon result in another humanitarian pause. Thus, Their aim will be to damage as much as they can, as quickly as they can, while they can, whatever the cost of Palestinians. What makes it possible is Netanyahu's dependence on an extremist minority of religious fundamentalists and trenchant Zionists in the government. They would not have anything like the wider support in Israel, well, not for October 7th, but they're doing more and more harm to Israel's long-term security. Not only does Israel risk becoming a pariah state even among its allies, but it's now fueling a generation of radical opposition from a reconstituted Hamas or its successor. It needs saving from itself. But that depends more than anything on Biden and the people around him. Perhaps pushed by the rapidly changing public mood in Western Europe, they must recognize their role in bringing an immediate end to the conflict. Meanwhile, Ehud Olmert, a former PM who, together with Bibi Netanyahu, is a brain trust behind 9/11, declares elimination of Hamas will not be achieved. Netanyahu is waging a personal war. Former PM Olmert commented the goal of the war, to destroy the Hamas movement, will not be achieved, stressing that Netanyahu's pledges are boastful, and he's fighting a war for his own personal gain. He writes, Gaza is crashing. Thousands are sadly paying with their lives. Thousands of Hamas fighters are happily being killed, but the destruction of Hamas will not be achieved. Whether Sinwar, his founder, enjoys a short life until he, Mohammed Deif, and their partners in Hamas leadership are eliminated, Hamas will continue as a very weak, battered, bleeding force, but it will continue on the edge of Gaza. Given this is the true assessment, we must prepare for a change of direction. I know it's unpopular in the atmosphere of incitement, bravado, and arrogance characterizing the conduct of this government and its head. One must not shy away from saying things that are not obvious but are necessary. Get this. Here you have Scott Ritter.
Well, if you won't say it, I will. Hamas is winning this war. They're winning it tactically. They're winning it operationally. They're winning it strategically. The whole Hamas plan was to get Israel to do everything they've done, to get Israel to bomb the infrastructure, to collapse buildings into rubble, to create this massive, chaos above ground, and to lure Israel into this where Hamas operates below ground. I've been looking at some of the same videos. It's curious, you know, I would have thought that Hamas, you know, when they build their tunnels to defend, that the tunnels would have gone right up to the surface and that there would have been some sort of boulder or bush disguising the tunnel entrance. And then I'm thinking, well, wait a minute, Scott, you're smarter than this. I took ground penetrating radar into Iraq to look for buried things. And when you have that kind of a surface anomaly, you pick it up. So I'm looking at the videos. It appears that Hamas's tunnels end around 8 to 10 meters below ground. And that in order to do their attack, they are breaching their tunnel and then collapsing that soil in, and then they're climbing up. It's because there's this big lip, this big soil lip that they have to come up. They put a ladder up and they work their way up. What does that mean? That means when, you know, Israel is coming through with their, you know, radar, their side scanning radar, their ground penetrating radar, looking for these tunnel networks. They ain't detecting that because that radar can't go down that deep, which means Israel has no clue where these tunnels are. And this is why you can have Israel actually build a camp where the bulldozer comes out and bulldozes up this little berm area. And then you have the Israelis in there smoking dope, smoking cigarettes, doing whatever they're doing, grab assing. And all of a sudden in the middle of this, pop, as a tunnel opens up and out pops Hamas, and they kill a bunch of Israelis, and they go back down and then they seal off that tunnel. They blow it up, collapse it, and Ukraine and the Israelis can't follow it in. This is a very, very coordinated defense. They fought the Israelis to a standstill in many areas. Israel's had to withdraw from certain areas of northern Gaza. Remember before the pause, the operational pause, Israel, we've defeated Hamas in the north. Not even close, pal. Not even close. The battle hasn't even begun. Israel has to have to withdraw from certain areas. Areas they deem to be secure, or suddenly their tanks are getting popped, their guys are getting killed. And it's not a whole bunch of dead guys. I mean, over 100 soldiers have been killed. It turns out, you know, around 20% of those are killed by Israelis. A friendly fire instance, which again points to the chaos of the fighting and the lack of discipline on the part of the Israelis. These aren't good soldiers. They're not good soldiers. You know they're not good because they're ill-disciplined. These are idiots that broadcast a video to his daughter, you know, hey, baby, happy birthday. I'm blowing up something. Boom. And they do that video. And Hamas is watching it going, kill him. And they did. You got Golani Brigade guys burning schools. Hey, we're burning schools. We're burning stuff. And Hamas said, kill them. And they did. Hamas is in control of this battlefield. It doesn't mean that they're going to push Israel out. That was never the objective. The objective was to pull them in and then hold them, grab them, kill them, grind them down. 5,000 Israeli wounded. That's the number you should focus on. And of that, 2,000 are permanently disabled. That means they'll never recover. That's a number. 5,000 casualties that Israel has suffered. And they aren't winning. They're losing. The military is almost in a panic. Meanwhile, up in the north against Hezbollah, Hezbollah is just playing this funny game of just grinding them down, grinding them down. Billions of dollars of high-tech equipment have been blown up, maybe hundreds of millions of dollars have been blown up by Hezbollah, and Israel can't replace it. So they're getting increasingly blind in the area. So you hear Gallant, the Ministry of Defense, and others, we're going to hold Hezbollah. Dude, Hezbollah will kick your ass. Okay, if you think Hamas has your number, Hezbollah has your number and all the numbers of your girlfriends. Okay, they own you. They own everything about you. If they want to, if you want to have total war with Hezbollah, you will lose northern Israel. You will lose the Galilee. That is a guaranteed outcome, and the Israeli military knows this. So,
Scott, your thoughts. I mean, between Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Houthis, Israel's in dire straits militarily.
Well, Blumenthal had a good observation, and that is there is a psychological, emotional meltdown that's occurring in Israel. There really is a pathology, a psychosis, a mental problem, and you can, you know, trace it back to their whole Talmudic arrogance of everyone else is Goyim, and we're the masters of the earth, and they're, you know, trying to live this out. But tactically and strategically and numerically, Israel is dead and dying and very soon will be completely annihilated. And remember, there's a good quote that Netanyahu said, America is a golden calf, and we will suck it dry, chop it up, and sell it off piece by piece until there is nothing left but the world's biggest welfare state that we will create and control. This is what we do to countries that we hate. We destroy them very slowly. Hey. Benjamin Netanyahu, 1990, allegedly I've heard that quote from asserting to him too. So Ritter is right. The tactical war in Gaza is going to result in the Israelis pulling out. And if they try and drag the United States into an air operation, it will be the annihilation of every politician that votes for this. And I think that's the real coming collapse, I think, is going to be the rejection of the federal government and the return to independent states. I do not see the Republic of the United States continuing. It'll be a band of, they may still recognize the Constitution, of course, but you're what Stephen Pidgeon described as diagonal land. You're seeing the formation of the conservative middle of the country states going all the way up to Alaska forming as a result of the coming crash of the dollar too. So I'll end it there. Go ahead, Jim.
Brian, your thoughts.
Martyrs. They're an interesting breed of cat. They're willing to trade their lives for something that they consider to be more important than them, maybe for the whole. You can go through history and find your martyrs all over the place. You can find guys that tried to get martyred, that got stronger and stronger and stronger. Guys that did get martyred, and they got stronger and stronger and stronger. But martyrs generally die for something they believe in. And they're willing, and why not? Of course, you've got the Christianity or you've got the Muslims. It's the same idea. I desire to depart and to be with Christ, which is better by far, but it is more necessary for you that I remain in the body. The Muslims feel the same way. Oh, if I die, I'm going to head off to paradise and I'm going to have my 1,000 virgins or whatever it happens to be. These people are trained with this mindset from a very young age that their life is less important than that. It's better to sacrifice their life in a war like this for the whole. Now, the question is why? Why doesn't Israel feel the same way? What is it that they don't have in their religion that doesn't make them want to become martyrs? And if I was Israel, if I was as an Israeli, I'd begin to recognize something very, very important here. I've been sold out by the American moneylenders and by the Jewish moneylenders. If you want to talk religion, go for it. The one thing Jesus Christ had a real hard time with was the moneylenders. What ended up getting them killed on that cross was turning over their tables in the temples. That's what ended up producing the 30 gold pieces to sell them out. Remember, Hamas is winning this war because they're willing to sacrifice all these people as martyrs, and Israel is not. This reminds me of Vietnam. Those people were fighting for something. It's martyrdom. And that's why they'll win.
Nice points, nice points. Very, very good. Don? You're muted.
Real quickly. Did Netanyahu say back in whenever that he hates the United States?
Well, of course he said. That's what we do with nations we hate.
Yeah. How about that? That's the kind of friend we're making, huh? Yeah.
Thanks.
That's our friend.
You got it. Meanwhile, because they're losing, they're committing massive war crimes. Top 10 story of 2023, number 4. Israel's pumping seawater into the Gaza tunnels, despite warnings from Russia about war crimes. The IDF is at work doing it once they set up two more bombs. The plan is for Israel to completely take over the Gaza Strip and absorb the land into its own, in other words, annex all of Gaza. The fact is that the seawater is going to contaminate freshwater wells and make the whole region uninhabitable for centuries. And they're going to potentially lose the 137 Israeli and foreign hostages who remain in Hamas captivity, who appear to be underground. Israel has identified at least 800 tunnels. Believe the full scope, however, is much larger. We're not sure how successful pumping will be since no one knows the details of the tunnels. It's impossible to know if it'll be effective. Here's a photo of Hamas senior officials in the Northern Brigade in the Gaza Strip in a tunnel. The lights, the sofas, marble-like floor, the fans. According to this report, five of the commanders photographed here have been eliminated. Frankly, I don't believe it. Meanwhile, Human Rights Watch reports Israel is using starvation as a weapon of war. What could be more obvious? Israeli forces are deliberately blocking the delivery of water, food, and fuel, while willfully impeding humanitarian assistance, apparently raising agricultural areas, depriving the civilian population of objects indispensable to their survival. These are all blatant violations of international law, of the Hague Convention, the Geneva Convention, but those are merely man's law. They claim to be responding to a higher law, God's will, which says that the chosen people are entitled to the promised land and can slaughter anyone who stands in their way. At the beginning of the massacre, Israeli defense minister announced the complete siege, saying the Israeli military is fighting human animals. For over 2 months now, Israel has been depriving Gaza's population of food and water, a policy spurred on or endorsed by high-ranking Israeli officials, reflecting an intent to starve civilians as a method of warfare. World leaders should be speaking out against this abhorrent war crime, which has devastating effects on Gaza's population. Remember the rule of threes. Humans can survive 3 minutes without air, 3 days without water, 3 weeks without food. This has been going on since October 8th. Meanwhile, if anything, perhaps even more stunning, Israel is using uranium and neutron bombs in Gaza. According to the research of Christopher Busby, a top nuclear physicist, longtime student of biochemical damage caused by the dispersal of depleted uranium, he has published his findings of the evidence for use of Israel by a neutron uranium warhead in Palestine and in Lebanon. His results are supported by samples taken from air, soil, bomb craters, and other sources in Gaza, consistent with an earlier study published in Nature in 2021. Uranium, Green Audit's research paper notes, is anthropogenic, meaning man-made. Doesn't exist in nature, which means the only possible explanation for its presence is weapons, which they believe used by Israel in the case of Gaza and already in Lebanon. The report's notes, let's propose the only logical answer is a uranium-based weapon exists, producing U-235 by neutron activation and has been deployed. Such a weapon must be some kind of neutron bomb. Turns out after Israel bombed an area in Lebanon, there was a 20-fold excess of gamma radiation in the crater compared to the background. Doctors in Gaza reached out in 2009 to express concern about unexplained weapon effect and observed in people of all ages who'd been exposed to Israeli weapons and bombs. Busby attempted to go to Egypt to obtain samples, but was refused permission. He was, however, able to test samples smuggled out of Gaza, finding the presence of enriched uranium. The new study looked at samples of Gaza sand, oil, and recycled building material and sand from Sinai, published in 2021. All the samples from Gaza had enriched uranium, while the sand from the Sinai did not. Thus, Sinai, not being a part of Gaza, functions as a control. The measures were, the results were established using gamma spectrometry, known for having greater accuracy than other methods. The authors believe Israel may have used a weapon containing 238 that produces U-235 neutron bombs because they produce neutron. If they are using weapons of this variety, it's bad news for everyone in Gaza. The health effects are devastating. If they are exposing people to uranium aerosol particles and neutrons, it can cause immediate effects like vaporized human limbs, severe burns, unusual flash burns. These weapons also have genetic effects, and there have been reports of excess birth defects in Gaza already. The authors note, neutron weapons and uranium particulate aerosols are ideal choices for armies dealing with targets that hide in urban environments as they pass through walls. They kill people but do not destroy buildings, which is exactly what Israel is dealing with in Gaza right now. While their genetic effects means they're also effective in aiding genocide. Scott, your thoughts?
Well, what this is going to do psychologically to the nations of the world, and I think America, even you know the average dullard American, is going in this direction, and that is what the Israelis are doing in Gaza, has overshadowed and eclipsed the October 7th attacks, allegedly, that I think Israel was a party to, and that's one area I disagree with Ritter. You know, he goes on and says that the Israelis or the Gaza attack was this brilliant orchestrated practiced operation by Hamas. I'm inclined to suspect that. My intuition tells me otherwise. And others like Hagopian have been very, very lucid in his academic presentation of this was all a planned operation. So it certainly looks that way. But what this has done, Jim, is no one remembers October 7th. And here's the other thing. No one is going to remember or buy or have sympathy for the Holocaust. Now, putting aside the false issue of the Holocaust and all that nonsense, or the nonsense of the Holocaust, remember the majority of the world and the people have been brainwashed about the Holocaust. Oh, the poor Jews with their numbers tattooed and all the ovens and all blah, blah, blah. Schindler's List. No one is going to care about that or remember that because the tuning fork, right? You hit one fork here and it vibrates this one over here. What Israel is doing in Gaza is obliterating everyone's memory and sympathy for the Holocaust. Because anyone who raises that, any Jewish person or politician that raises that or tries to sell or take advantage of that, like they always do, is instantly going to trigger the awareness of, wait a minute, why do we have people blocking the freeway with Palestinian flags? Oh, it's because of what the Jews are doing to the Palestinians. It's inconveniencing Americans at this point. And I think you're going to see the Israeli Mossad do more false flag attacks and blowing up buildings and stuff. But everyone is going to look at anyone who claims the Holocaust and say, you know, you have nothing to speak about because what you're doing in it, to Gaza and the Palestinians is exactly what you're claiming the Nazis and the Germans did to you. It balances out, it nullifies each other. So that's the big next observation that I'm predicting is our people are going to grow intolerant and really angry at Jews in general because they're causing all of this stuff. I know there's all sorts of undercurrents, Masonic and, you know, Luciferian and stuff like that. But for the average American, the average Canadian, the average Briton, the average Frenchman, the average German, even though they're brainwashed, everyone I think is going to move in a direction of being just anti-Jewish, pissed off, and not buying any more of these Holocaust excuses. And I think it's going to trigger anger when the Jewish lobby and Jewish people and all that try and use it. Jim?
Oh, I think you're completely right. Jewish victimhood is a figment of a distant past. No longer. They are savages and monsters. They're every bit as brutal and sadistic as the stereotype they've advanced of the Nazi prison guards. Brian, your thoughts?
Character is important. The reason that you fight fair is that when the battle's over, you've got to live with your neighbors. Jews don't fight fair, or at least whoever's pulling the strings here aren't fighting fair. The whole lie of October 7th, the whole world's beginning to see through that. It's all over Twitter. Everybody's being able to figure it out. Wait a second. How did these guys break through the best security defenses? I mean, even General Flynn came out the other day and did a video about how it was crazy. You know what it is? Everybody watched Las Vegas happen. Well, how did Stephen Paddock get all those guns up in that hotel in the casino that's the most watched place in the whole entire world? So it's unfair that they would pull a psychological operation in order to ad advance a financial agenda, which was gentrification of Gaza. I mean, what? Why? Gentrification of Gaza?
And the oil fields, the gas fields in
Yeah,
the head.
that's the point. That's the point. Why? And you killed all these people and made martyrs out of them? For what? You could, it's security, so they don't do another October 7th. The whole world's scratching their head right now, saying, wait a second. Israel and all who are partnered up with them, including America, I'm not thinking they're on the moral high ground anymore.
Israeli real estate developers are already promoting luxury condos with a view of the Mediterranean in Gaza. They're already doing that. Don, take us out.
Oh, what a show, first hour here, last show of 2023. Boy, and what a year it has been, and it has not been a good year and we are reviewing it for what it's worth. We want to come back for the other half because this is powerful, and we need to really get the facts here and straighten out the record for history. So come on back. God bless. See you soon.